Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's Crop Insurance Month. Can we maintain a $5 corn bid? We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises. Our panelists today are Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin, and Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's start off with this question. Do each of you believe that the recent trade down to lower levels in the marketplace was just a stepping stone to a much higher price?
I think that when you look at the Dow and the impact of the Dow, it took some color off the market, but nothing's changed.
So you do believe that?
I certainly do.
Greg?
Yes, I'm in that camp too. I think the acreage figure could be very friendly corn, and until we see the acreage figure and until we see what kind of weather start we get off to weather-wise, it's going to be hard for any of the traders to sell this market off very much.
And Steve?
Totally in agreement with the other two. It's all tied into the energies and the outside global markets, and they remain strong, so are the grains.
And let's take a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago for the week. March corn, a high this week of 509 3/4. They're low at $4.90. Settlement price at $5.50, up 2 1/4 from last week. December at 519, up 9 1/4 from last week. So the question on many people's minds, since you said you believe it's going to go higher, much higher for the month of February when we're setting crop insurance levels?
Oh, I certainly think we'll easily go through, and I believe we'll go through the current contract high. And depending upon the outside markets, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a $6 number come in here.
Greg, $6 is something that the Andersons is talking about. Even I don't know whether the Andersons can be looking forward to $6 corn. My guess is not, but you could tell me.
Hopefully not right away. Maybe closer to fall when we don't have to send as much margin money to Chicago to maintain that hedge for as long a period of time. But no, I agree. We will see higher prices. I think December corn closed Friday at 519. The old high was 540, I believe, and I think we'll take that out, at least retest it during the month of February. So, yeah, we'll have a pretty good average for February. Crop insurance average will be somewhere in the 530s, I would guess.
And speaking of margin calls, I guess it's a daily basis as to whether you're doing HTAs or not there at the Andersons. Is that right?
Yeah, we're in a constant changing environment. For a couple of weeks when this market first spiked up a while back, we halted HTAs and halted buying corn in the 09 and 010. And as of this week, we are now starting to write HTAs again for the 08 crop. We're still not buying 09 or 010, but as I say, that's constantly changing. So I tell people just keep calling because every week could be something different.
You know, and maybe you can – how are they spinning this out of the corporate headquarters when they drop in and out of that? What are they telling you about what it means, what the company is protecting, why the rationale behind dropping in and out of HTAs and what's been happening?
I think with the influx of fund money, you just have to be very, very cautious and, you know, very conservative. Who's to say that even 5% of normal, what I would call traditional stock money or equity money moving over into the commodities market, what kind of an impact that would have on prices? You know, we like to think that the commodity, the Chicago Board of Trade market, is a huge market, and it is, you know, to some extent. But compared to the New York equities market, it's just a drop in the bucket. So if you get too much, you know, if you get a lot of money moving over from one market to another, we've never been in this kind of environment before. So I think caution. is the word. And like I tell farmers, don't get too upset. You know, everybody will get it figured out, but we just have to take time. And, you know, this has only been 3 or 4 weeks and things have changed already. And in 3 or 4 weeks, things could change again.
Boy, the pond got a lot bigger and the big fish or medium fish are a lot smaller than they used to be, I suppose, at this point. Steve, when you look out and you talk to producers about using crop insurance, what are they telling you at this time of their plans for using crop insurance? What kinds of things are they considering and not considering?
Well, obviously, the revenue protection with the high inputs that we've got today, you've got to get those protected. We've got producers, believe it or not, out there that have bought some puts to protect their insurance price for the month of February. As soon as the average comes in or gets close enough towards the end of February, they're probably going to come out of those puts. But if all the wheels would fall off or something would happen major in the world and this price of December corn and November beans would go down in the month of February, they'd like to have some protection even at these price levels.
Gary Schnitke is using a $5 level for corn at this point, $12.25 for soybeans. You think that's close enough? That's just the number they happen to stick in, but he says they'll be changing it fairly regularly on the premium calculators on the FarmDoc website.
Well, the thing we really would like to see happen from the crop insurance is those last 5 days of February to have a completely steady market to eliminate any volatility, because the price of premiums sometimes, or the cost of premiums, have a lot to do with high-low factors on individuals or on the county products, the volatility factor, and that can make a difference in $3, $4, $5 an acre premium. So what we'd like to have the last 5 days of February is usually when that volatility is determined, is a real steady market. Now, whether we get that or not, that's who knows.
Yeah, we certainly haven't been able to count on it from day to day right now. You know, we've got people that have done the same thing as far as the puts, you know, to be able to cover their crop insurance numbers, except that we're probably not going to step out of them, because whether we like it or not, you know, if you cover 75%, you still have 25% of your crop open. And, you know, we'll either look to roll those puts higher to be able to continue to protect that. But certainly seeing guys looking closely at what crop insurance can do for them this year.
Compared to last year, let's take a look at pricing. What do you have on the books compared to last year in terms of on a percentage-wise for new crop sales?
I'd say we're probably a little bit ahead of last year, and that's pretty surprising considering the price levels we're seeing. But I think farmers realize, I mean, this hasn't snuck up on us. Farmers realize that we're just one bad crop away or one small acreage figure away from even higher prices than what we're seeing right now. So I don't get the sense that farmers have overextended themselves. I think they've made some sales at what they consider now to be too soon, but that might have been the first 25% or first 30%. So when they're selling their next 20 or 30%, you know, they might make that sale, but then I don't get the sense that they're, you know, getting more than 50% sold even at these levels.
That's on corn. What about soybeans?
They grew so few soybeans last year that, and they sold them too soon, that this year they're just not sure what they want to do with new crop beans. We haven't bought much more than what we did last year at this point, percentage-wise. And again, beans could be $15, $16. They could be $9 or $10. Farmers aren't sure, so I think they're getting a few sold, but again, not getting over-aggressive.
Are they also not sure about the acreage split they're going to use this year?
Well, I think there's two different stories there. One, in Illinois, you know, farmers got their input costs got their inputs put on last fall when the costs were relatively cheap. You know, we had a nice fall, early fall. A lot of fall field work was done. So in Illinois and places like that, they got fall field work done and input costs locked in. Corn acres may not be down all that much, but you take Indiana, Iowa, some of these other states, Nebraska, I've heard, where they didn't get a lot of fall field work done, and now the input costs are almost, you know, not double, but quite a bit higher. I think you're going to see a lot more bean acres come out of those states.
Oh, as we visit with some of the folks that are on the front line here, your seed salesmen in particular, as they travel throughout at least the state of Illinois, the number they keep throwing out, and we get this from various, is about 10% undecided acres. That's a major swing, though, if you take 10% of 87, 88 million, whatever you want to talk about, that can still be a major swing. So the factors will be, you know, how high is anhydrous? Can they get it? Probably the biggest factor of this spring will be weather. Can they get out, get the stuff planted? I don't know of any farmers that I've ever been around wouldn't rather raise corn than beans, particularly here in Illinois. And if they get a great start and the weather's going really good and it's going in good, you know, that extra 80 acres may go ahead and be corn. But that's all down the road, and it's the number we're hearing all over from one end of the state to the other is about 10% undecided at this point.
Soy complex now, March contract at a high for the week at 1298.5, a low at 1228.25. The settlement price in the March up 44.5 cents from last week at $12.87.25. November beans up 22 cents at $12.54. Goldman Sachs at one point, I think, released a 1450 number for soybeans. You think we can make it that high?
On old crop, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Well, I think 16 would be a possibility, or more than the 1450. I think we'll exceed the 1450. And I know I sound like a bullish, crazy person, but at the same time, I still understand, you know, the old crop is something we've got in hand. We know that it's here. And if we don't expand our acres, we could end up with a negative carryout for this next year. So we have to really go long and hard to be able to get the bean acres we need. So, yes, I do believe it can go higher than that.
You know, old crop at $16, is that because of potential short supplies in the new crop based on acreage, based on potential drought? Why do you think it would go? What are the reasons behind a move like that?
Well, the reasons behind a move like that is more related to what the U.S. dollar's been doing. You know, and the U.S. dollar is still the key. As long as the U.S. dollar continues to be in the 75, 76, even up to 80 area, we shouldn't expect to see exports go down. We know China's fighting for beans. I mean, they've had people who've been killed in the supermarkets fighting over bean oil because of shortages. And so I think that the American dollar being down plays well into the fact that China needs beans. It's cheaper for them right now than it's ever been. Even at these prices, this price is still not what they're paying because of the exchange rates. And so I think if we don't lose export sales, there's no question that we can move higher.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. I think just in the last 4 or 5 days, China's bought about 10 cargoes of beans. Some of them from the Gulf here, some from Pacific Northwest, and some from South America. But obviously, these high prices haven't curbed their demand whatsoever. And, you know, they just keep coming at us and coming at us hard. And I totally agree with Jackie. The key may be to the weak dollar to some extent. But we certainly haven't shut off demand at these price levels.
Greg, $6 corn, $16 soybeans.
I agree on the corn and old crop beans. As both have said, we just have a limited supply. What we have is what we have. Now, new crop, it could be a different story. We could plant a lot more bean acres, and those prices eventually could go lower. But who knows? I thought $7 wheat was a good place to sell, so I thought I thought $14 beans might be a good place to sell too. But they may go a lot higher than that too.
What do you see for new crop?
What do I see for new crop?
Yeah.
Well, I think new crop beans could hit $14. The thing I think that we have to keep in perspective is what basis could possibly do. I mean, it's really foolish for any producer to get attached to the futures market without actually looking at where basis is at the same time. And so if we hit the $14 mark because the funds come in and buy, that doesn't necessarily mean the cash is going to hit that level.
$2 basis?
Could be. I could see it easily. We saw it in the Dakotas last year. There's nothing to say we can't see it anywhere else. And, you know, the reality is when you talk about basis, when you looked, people are complaining about basis right now. You got nothing to complain about. When we had $5 beans, basis was about 12% of that. Okay. In other words, about a buck on average in the U.S., not necessarily here in Illinois. Well, if we were today, we're looking at about 8% of the value of the bushel in basis. If we were at 12%, it'd be negative $1.55 right now. So I think, you know, we have to keep in perspective the value of the bushel versus what the basis represents in that. And so why couldn't it go to $2?
On the other hand, there is something worthwhile complaining about on convergence.
Yes.
Rather than basis, which
yes.
are two different things, right?
Yes.
Greg, you want to talk about that at all?
Well, I think people are looking into that. Farmers have been complaining for a couple of years now. It started with the wheat market a few years ago, and the soybean market's following suit. The corn market hasn't been quite as bad, but everybody's got a legitimate complaint in my mind that if beans are $14 on the board, somebody should be paying $14 cash. Now, that may be Chicago and that may be in a few months, but in the good old days, $14 on the board meant that somebody was getting $14 for their cash beans, and that hasn't worked out the last couple of years.
Take a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade in the wheat market. March contract, a high this week of $9.93, the low at $9.09.5 for the soft red. Settlement price from last week, a dime higher at $9.43. July futures were off 4.5 cents from last week at $8.74.5. But really, Steve, the big action was not in Chicago this week. It was at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange with the spring wheat, and they moved on Friday limit higher.
Well, probably rightfully so. I think if you go back to the last USDA report, the shocker was the reduction in the wheat acres in the hard red wheat country in Oklahoma, Colorado, so on and so forth. We increased our soft red acres here in the Midwest. The only place left to meet the needed acres in America to plant is the soft red wheat up in Minneapolis. So they ought to be the leader in the wheat at this point in time. And they're doing it. And, you know, the first one to break should be the soft in Chicago and then the hard in Kansas City. And the strength should come from Minneapolis.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what we saw a lot last year was we saw a lot of the Minneapolis and the KC wheat processors going in and selling the Minneapolis KC, buying the Chicago. It gave a real artificial image to that price, even though we had a very good inventory of the Chicago wheat at the time. So now all we're doing is playing catch up.
Exactly, and that's where this basis is going to come in again. If the funds continue to throw their money in the Chicago market, and obviously there's more liquidity, more action up there in Chicago, which they like. We may see wider than dollar basis on wheat this summer. It's, you know, it's a wild card, and it's anybody's guess.
In 2 minutes, we'll check in with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises to see what his take is on the commodity markets.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois residents were on a winter weather roller coaster all this week. Temperatures warmed early in the week as strong southerly winds set up ahead of a strong low pressure system and cold front. High temperatures on Tuesday reached the mid-50s into northern Illinois and to a record-setting 70 in southwestern Illinois just ahead of the cold front. Once the front punched through, temperatures rapidly crashed. Most locations experienced temperature drops of 25 degrees or more within the first hour of the frontal passage, and within 3 to 4 hours, temperatures were down into the teens. Thunderstorms with heavy rain changed to sleet and freezing rain, and then snow over the course of an hour or two. Winds were sustained at 35 to 45 miles per hour with gusts to as high as 60 that whipped the snow into blizzard conditions in parts of northwestern and central Illinois. That wild ride was followed by a sunny but cold day on Wednesday before yet another winter storm took aim on Illinois late Thursday and on Friday. After a quiet and seasonably cool weekend, warmer weather will make a brief return to Illinois on Monday as another weather system approaches from the plains. This will likely bring some rain to Illinois on Monday as the cold front approaches. The cold front will move through Illinois on Tuesday, and that will be followed by colder weather for the last half of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
So you've heard about the Week in a Day fund drive, and you're thinking, yeah, I'll get around to it. Well, round to it's are mythical beasts, and in a one-day drive, there is no tomorrow. So if you're not going to be available on February 5th to take part in our first-ever one-day fund drive, call early, 217-244-9455, or give online at willpledge.org.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelist in studio today, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin, Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Our guest on the phone is Glenn Ring. He's the president of Glenn Ring Enterprises, which focuses on providing information, education, research, and support for traders, analysts, and other participants in the futures industry. Glenn, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
It's delightful to be back again.
So $6 and $16 sound like the right numbers to you?
Well, I'm afraid I might be walking into a buzzsaw here today or a smoke-filled room. I'm not sure which, because I'd like some of that right now, because I'd like to I'll count on it when I see it. Can we do it? I think we're at a very critical point here in the grains and oil seeds that we're either going to go a lot higher or we're about to go a lot lower. And the historical data argues that we're about to go lower.
I was thinking that that was the side you would take, so prove it to me.
Prove it to you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. First statistic I have, 78% of the time in the last five decades, corn has not sustained the early move in the year. That's pretty heavy odds already. Never have we sustained an early year move like this, not without getting a major correction at least first. A major, I mean multi-month correction first. Of the years that we've made tops in January, most of them have been made around the January crop report and have been associated with what were termed bullish crop reports. So I'll run off of that for a starter alone. Other things going on in here. The long-term force is the dollar. And my work shows that the dollar index is making a major bottom. My work shows that gold is likely making a major top. Those are the two measures I use of the dollar. And if those currents shift, so do the currents in the marketplace as well. And finally, the talk of recession, though being widespread, is a valid talk. I've been looking for the economic slowdown since late last summer. My work showed me that it was coming. And one of the things that should be associated with this kind of a recession or this kind of let's call it an economic slowdown. I don't know if we'll actually end up with a net recession. But you should see deflation creep into the commodity world, and you are starting to see it in the energies already. And those show major tops for me. Most of my work shows tops that have a, like the energies. My stuff shows tops they'll probably hold for years now with about an 80% confidence on those tops. In the grains and stuff, the tops that are not confirmed yet, of course, Minneapolis wheat's out on its own for the time being, but the grains, the tops are not confirmed yet for me. But if they don't get taken out here during February, I'm looking at a percentage probability of 70 to 80% probability that we will be down into summer, early summer, and then we'll see what we get.
When you talk about tops in the energy markets, I assume you're talking about crude oil at $100. So yep. Are we talking about a setback to $60 or $40 for a trading range?
The best target I have off the top of my head would be $41. In 2010. We have a 12-year cycle I run in crude oil was due to top. We topped last fall exactly to the month it was supposed to top for me, and we've been in a topping phase since then. The action right now says that we should go into a bear market that will last.
Can I ask you a question, Greg?
Sure.
You know, you talk about the bottoming action in the American dollar.
Yes.
What do you see as far as how far it has to bounce back before you really see a negative impact on the export trade that we've got?
Well, the amount that it bounces back isn't as important as the fact that if it starts to turn up, that's what matters. Now, the historical link to that is that you typically get a rush in exports when the dollar starts bottoming. And the world somehow, probably doesn't consciously, but you know this is man's reaction, I guess, starts to front load exports. And it typically, historically, overstates demand by front-loading the stuff, and then you end up with a classic short crop, long tail behavior, whether you've got a short crop or not. And what will happen is when the dollar bottoms, you typically will start seeing the pressure show up in the grains within 10 months, and it's often much sooner than that.
Okay. Well, one other thing I just wanted to ask you is, you know, you're using all the historical data, but in the past, I don't think we've ever seen a situation like we've seen, let's say, in the wheat market, where we've outconsumed world production for the last 2 years in a row. Are you making any adjustments for the tightness in all of the world supplies and the continuation of the growth in population and demand?
To the extent that the market that I use market data, market-generated data, to tell me when it has accounted for that, that's the adjustments I make. I am not a fundamentalist. I'm not a pure technician either. I'm a student of market behavior, but, I see what I see. I have 9-year turns due in wheat in 2009, which will likely be a low. I have the next 5.5-year cycle low in corn due in 2010. The corn typically makes its cycle high in years 2, 3, or 4 of the cycle. This is year 4 of the cycle. The high can be now. I have no problem with a drought coming along this summer and driving us on one extra leg to new highs. I can see that, but that's the wild card. And I'm not so sure that with the widespread expectations or at least concern about what Iowa State put out, I'm not so sure we don't have some of the drought already priced into the market anyway.
Glenn, you may have answered this already, but we planted 93.6 million acres of corn last year, and most traders are looking for 87 to 90 million acres. But if that number would be a lot less than that, if it was somewhere around 84 or 85 million acres, wouldn't you say throw the charts out the window, this market's going a lot higher? Or does that not enter into – I mean, does that not even enter into consideration when you're trying to decide where to sell more corn at?
Well, again, my expertise is not that, so I can't use something that doesn't work for me. So, yes, I would not throw the charts out the window. The market will tell me when. I don't use the charts to predict. I use them to respond. And so what I'm setting right now when I talk about the probabilities in the grains, we have done is I'm responding to what we have done coming into this time frame. And so far, until these markets take out the highs we made in January, I consider those very important tops. And my ag customers, we went ahead and sold a lot of grain, and with the attitude that we'll protect it if we get into new highs. But otherwise, we're planning on protecting it on a corrective break later on.
Glenn, a question for you. If energy, crude oil in particular, goes down to your $41 in 2010, or mm-hmm. let's just use $50 a barrel,
sure.
and we would develop a quasi-drought, say, so to speak, what does that do to the price of ethanol if we have high-priced grain? Is grain going to be tied in with crude oil and tied in with the price of ethanol to make that, because that's part of our demand here in this country?
Indeed. I do think that link is going to be there. But what we've already seen, what's happened in the ethanol pricing and what we've done since the ethanol market really emerged and how we declined so severely back off the all-time highs we had in ethanol, shows, too, that we can get out ahead of ourselves in terms of supply or in terms of supply capacity. I guess it's going to, part of my mind is going to depend upon how far ahead are the ethanol plants bought, because I know here, in my region and on up into the Dakotas, I'm talking to producers where the ethanol plants are telling me they're about done covering their needs for the entire calendar year, locking them up, et cetera. So I'm wondering if we haven't really just pulled a lot of demand forward for this calendar year. And, we'll see what we get on the back end of that. But, yeah, in the long term, the ethanol factor is going to be a factor in corn. No question about it. And the energy prices in that. But how much of a factor? I just know that markets have gone through these cycles for, people say we're in times like we've never seen, but I really admit that. I have to go back to the Civil War era to see certain times that look like now, and I actually have to go back to the 1600s France to see certain times like now. But I've seen times like this.
Glenn, we appreciate you being with us today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Glenn Ring is with Glenn Ring Enterprises. You can learn more from him at www.glennring.com. A quick final word from our panelist in studio, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Well, I think right now it's more important than ever to know exactly where you're at, what your costs are, and to look for strategies that allow you to sleep at night and continue to perhaps see what the market really wants to do.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Keep an eye out on the Outlook Conference in Washington, D.C., February 21st and 22nd. If those acres are not as high for corn, that's just another indication to be patient in making more corn sales.
And Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Use your best ability with risk management. Manage the farm. Keep profitable and don't be afraid to take profits.
I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.